Well, before we get started with our message this morning, I want to take the opportunity to have a last minute chance to invite you tonight to our comedy night for couples that's going on here in this room. This is going to be a great opportunity for marriages, for you to have an opportunity to laugh together and to think about some ways to grow together. It happens tonight here at 6:30. And even if you haven't signed up yet, it is not too late to sign up. In fact, I'm told that we're going to take walk-ins at the door, people who want to show up at 6:30. And so if you haven't signed up, we hope you'll be here tonight. If you have signed up, but you've got some friends that you know would enjoy this, married, engaged, thinking about getting married, whatever it is, we would be thrilled for you to join us tonight for that event. And I want to tell you, I'm glad you're here this morning. And I know I say that every week. I'm always glad that you come because these gatherings that we have are important. It's important for us to get together and to focus on the words of the songs and the prayers and the scriptures that we share together. It's important for us to get together and rehearse and retell the story of Jesus, even if we've heard it a number of times before, because this is the story that we're called to live our life according to. And it's really important for our kids and our grandkids to see this expression of faith and this expression of worship that's going on when they're here with us. And so I'm really glad that you're here to be a part of that. But I'm particularly glad that you're here this morning because I want to talk to you about a fundamental aspect of church life that a lot of you are missing out on. Even if you come here every Sunday, even if you're in every one of these worship services on a weekly basis, there is a part of church life that some of you have not partaken of, and you may not even realize that you're missing out on it until it's too late. It was about 13 years ago, I was a youth minister fresh out of college at a little church in South Texas, and I walked out of my apartment one Sunday morning to get to the church building early and finish prepping for my Sunday school lesson that day, and I walked out of the apartment down the sidewalk and to go get in my truck, and I look around and my truck's not there. I thought, that's kind of funny, and so I walked around the corner and thought, maybe I parked someplace different, you know, I was confused. I walked around the corner of the next building, and it wasn't there either, and it turned out my truck had been stolen overnight. So I called the police, and they came, and they filed a report and all that kind of stuff, and then they were gracious enough to give me a ride in the back of the police cruiser to the church office, which raised a few eyebrows when I got there, you know, as you can imagine. But what was even more incredible was that in between Bible class and the worship service that day, I got a call on my cell phone and they had found my truck about 10 miles away. It was in the next town over, but it had been picked clean. I mean, like piranhas on a ham, you know, like they had nothing left. They had taken all the stuff that was not bolted down and a few of the things that were, you know, like they had ripped the dashboard off and taken the stereo, and they had taken like the toolbox that was bolted down in the back of the bed of the truck, and they had taken all kinds of stuff and stuff from the inside too. They took my baseball glove. Like the one that I'd had since middle school that was broken in just right, you know, like that's so frustrating. And they took my college class ring, and they took these tools that my granddad had given me when he decided that I had more use for them at this point than he did. And they took my big book of CDs. You remember those? Remember when you had to go to the store to buy music? And you had to buy a case to carry it all in, you know, and like you could only listen to it in one place at a time. So even though I got my truck back, I was still missing a bunch of my stuff. And so I called State Farm. I called my insurance agent and said, you know, told them what happened. And they sent an adjuster out, and he starts, you know, poking around and figuring out what it's going to take to repair the door that they had damaged when they broke in, and to replace the dashboard and the steering column and all that kind of stuff. And I asked him, I said, well, what about the CDs and the baseball glove and the ring and the tools? And he said, oh, no, those aren't covered by your auto insurance. Those are covered by your renter's insurance. Now, this was a problem. Not only did I not have renter's insurance, I didn't know renter's insurance existed, okay? Like, I had no idea that that was an option at this point. And so I was totally on my own to replace that stuff. So the next day I called State Farm, and I got renter's insurance like immediately, but I, all that other stuff I had to replace myself. And it turns out that jingle where they say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there, it's true if you sign up before you lose your stuff. If you don't do it before you lose your stuff, that neighbor is nowhere to be found. That's just how insurance works, though. I mean, that was fair. That's the way it works. You have to have insurance on your house and on your car, and you can insure your business and your health and even your life. You can insure all kinds of possessions and purchases, but the purpose of it is the same. You're establishing a relationship with them so that if disaster strikes, you don't have to go through that by yourself. That's the whole point. That's what you're trying to accomplish, so that if your car gets totaled or your house catches fire or you have some kind of major medical emergency, then you're going to need some help to make it through that, and it'll be there because you've established the relationship ahead of time. But I wonder, have you ever thought about what would happen to you in the case of a spiritual emergency in your life? Have you ever thought about what your life would look like if you went through a devastating spiritual emergency? Who would carry you? Who would walk beside you if you went through such a loss that was so deep that it just left your soul reeling and you were wondering how you were going to keep going? I mean, maybe it's the loss of a loved one. Maybe it's the loss of hope. Maybe it's the loss of a dream. Maybe it's the loss of control. But if you went through some kind of situation where the loss just felt so intense, what would happen to you at that point? Because every one of us is going to go through moments like that. In fact, the whole point of the sermon series we've been going through, the Fresh Air series, is about finding some resuscitation in the midst of a moment when your breath gets taken away by how difficult life is, a spiritual emergency. And I think one of the most dangerous risk factors in a spiritual emergency is our human tendency to try to go it alone. You know, we've got great admiration for people who accomplish great things by themselves. Think about it. I mean, the explorers who reach the poles and the peaks and the people who circumnavigate the globe by themselves, we think that's incredible. But I want to tell you this morning, there is nothing admirable about simply being too stubborn to ask for help. And that's what I see a lot of people do in the face of spiritual distress. I see people that are going through addictions, and they're doing it all by themselves. And it just gets into this downward spiral, and things are getting worse and worse, and they don't tell a soul about it until, I mean, it is starting to absolutely ruin and affect every aspect of their life. I see people who are in marriages that are struggling, husband and wife that are not on the same page, they're not getting along, but they don't tell anyone about it until the marriage is absolutely up on the rocks, where it's just already been crashed and it's already over. And I see believers who struggle with doubt until their spiritual passion just finally dies down and goes away, and they face the entire struggle by themselves. And I get it. We don't want to admit our weaknesses. We would be embarrassed if we were perceived as someone who didn't have it all together, right? I mean, we want to be the people who have all the ducks in a row, got all of the I's dotted and the T's crossed. We want to be perceived as someone who's got it all together. But I want to tell you a truth this morning. If you have maintained a reputation as someone who has it all together, it's only because you haven't run into the right storm yet. And it's out there. It's out there. There's a storm that will absolutely rock you to your core, because even the most devoted followers of Jesus experience dark nights of the soul, and they experience temptation that comes to every one of us. But I have good news for you. I want to tell you that God provides a safety net for us. He provides a network of support for us to depend on, because every once in a while there's going to be a moment in your life, a phase in your life where you're going to need a good neighbor that's going to show up, and it's best to have that neighbor in place before you need them. And I want us to get some spiritual wisdom this morning on that topic. So if you've got your Bible with you or the Bible app on your phone, I'm going to ask you to turn with us. We're going to be in the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 4. And before you raise your hand, if you don't know where Ecclesiastes is, there is no harm in using the table of contents. You're going to find it about halfway through the Old Testament portion of your Bible. It's in this portion of the Old Testament that we refer to as wisdom literature or books of wisdom. And what this means is, even if you're not a Jesus person yet, like somebody dragged you here this morning, promised you free lunch, whatever it was, okay? If you're not a Jesus person, I still want you to hear this, because the fact is, this is not a Christian text. This is a pre-Christian text. This is a text that was around before Jesus walked the earth. This is a text that just applies to life, okay? This is true. Because the writer of Ecclesiastes looked around and he saw a bunch of people that were wasting their life. They were wasting their time on pursuits that didn't matter. He saw people that were working because they wanted to accumulate possessions, they wanted to make a name for themselves, or they wanted to seek pleasure above everything else. And he noticed that all of that seems to end in this feeling of it's all wasted, it's all a disappointment in the end. And he noticed the same thing about people who go through life by themselves. And so Ecclesiastes chapter 4, the writer talks about companionship, beginning in verse 9. Here's what he says. He says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. Now, this is not like groundbreaking science, right? This is common sense. We've known about teamwork for a long time, but I want to tell you, this passage is not about efficiency. This is about safety. He says, verse 10, when you have two people, he says, if either of them falls down, one can help the other up. If you fall, you have someone else with you, and then you're not in quite as much trouble, right? But the writer says, but pity anyone. I think of Mr. T saying this, you know. I pity the guy. I pity the fool, he would say. I pity anyone who falls and has no one there to help them up. And we've all seen this. Haven't you seen people in your life who hit such a deep snag financially? Maybe they lost their job and the bottom just falls out and they've got no one that's helping them. You've seen this. Have you seen people, husband and wife, they're drifting apart and the relationship's, you know, really getting bad and nobody else knows about it until it's too late? Or have you seen someone that fails morally and their spouse is like calling and asking, like, would you talk to him? Would you, or would you talk to her? And they're saying, somebody help, and there's nobody. Or maybe you've seen a person who lost a loved one suddenly that was really close to them and they don't have a shoulder to cry on. You've seen some situations like that. You've seen people that were that isolated and that closed off. And the question that you've got to ask yourself this morning is, who do you have? Who do you have in your life that would help you if you fell down like that? Maybe by no fault of your own, you just fell. Who would be there? Who do you have that's going to be there when some tragedy or challenge catches you by surprise? Do you have someone that you can call at 4 a.m. and you know they're going to answer the phone and not be mad about it? Because they want to be there to help. Better yet, do you have a community of people who are walking with you to make sure you can get back up if you fall? Because the writer of Ecclesiastes says, pity anyone who falls and has no one there to help them up. That's a terrible spot to be. You need someone. You need a group of people who are going to be there. You need people in your life who are going to notice when something's wrong. You need people in your life who are going to ask you, what's going on? Do you need help? And they're not going to take no for an answer because they know better. You can't go through it alone. And so the writer of Ecclesiastes goes on, verse 12. He says, though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. It's not about just the danger of falling. It's about coming under attack. It's about being overwhelmed. It's about withstanding all the force and the pushing and the pulling that's trying to break you. And he says, a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. And the point is, you're a whole lot better off when you're in a tight spot, or you might not even get into a tight spot if you don't go by yourself. I've mentioned this before, but when I was in college, I had to get 3 physical education credits, PE credits, and so I searched through the course catalog to find like the coolest thing, and I found out I could take scuba for a PE credit, which I thought was like the most awesome thing. It's like joining the swim team, except sinking is encouraged, you know, like it's the best thing. And so I signed up for scuba, intro to scuba, and I signed up for this class, and we practiced for weeks in the swimming pool. And then for the final exam, we had to take a trip out to the, like far west Texas, to this state park out there that has this spring-fed swimming pool that's about 20 or 25 feet deep. And so we're swimming in that thing, and in scuba, it's really important that they rely on this buddy system. You have to have a buddy, you know, when you're going down underwater. But in this pool, it was like no big deal because, like, the surface is right there. And if you had some kind of equipment trouble, like, you know, you do this and you're, you know, you're back. It's not a big deal. But the next semester, I signed up for advanced scuba, which meant that we were going to go deeper and darker. And so for the final exam this time, we went to this like Cold War era ICBM missile silo that had been flooded, okay? And the water in this thing is 115 feet deep, and there's no natural light coming in. There's just a few lights above the surface, and it's deep, and it's dark, and in order to pass the final, we had to go past 80 feet at least. And I want to tell you, it's different. When you're 80 feet deep and you're down there and it's dark, the buddy system becomes more important. Because if you run out of air down there or you have an equipment malfunction while you're that deep, it's a long way back to the surface and you might not make it safely. And the buddy system becomes that much more urgent to you. The buddy system can save you when you're overwhelmed. When you're that deep and you get into trouble, you're going to have a hard time saving yourself. But that buddy and the other divers in the group, they can save your life. They can come to the rescue when you need it most. But there's this one really important thing about the buddy system. It's really important to remember, and it's this rule. You really ought to pick your buddy before you go diving. Think about it. You could wait until you run out of air and then be doing this thing, you know. That's a bad time to look for a buddy. You pick the buddy before you get in the water. And more than that, you and your buddy, you look out for each other and you check and you double check one another's gear and you make sure everything's working and then you agree on a plan for the dive. And all of that preparation and all that double checking means that your buddy can keep an eye out for you even before the trouble starts. And the same principles apply to your spiritual life. If you've got a community of people who care about you, if you've got a community of people who know your kids' names and they know your pets' names and they know where you went to school and they know where you grew up and they know some of the stories of how you got in trouble and they know about you, then those are the people you're going to want to show up when you're in the ER. Those are the people that you're going to want to call in the middle of the night. Those are the people who will actually answer the phone because your name's already in their caller ID. And they're not going to have to look up directions to get to your house because they've already been there. And they'll be there in an emergency. And in some cases, they'll keep some tough situations from becoming emergencies. Friends like that, they can see your blind spots, you know. They can see the areas where maybe you're kind of going to run off in a ditch here in a minute, and they can be a sounding board. They can question your decisions. They'll be a listening ear for you, and it can save your marriage, and it can save your reputation, and it can save your finances, and it can save your soul. But the thing about spiritual community is you've got to invest in it before you need it. You got to. It's like retirement. You want it to be there for you when you need it? When do you invest? Yesterday. Earlier, if possible. We've got a ministry here at Heritage we call Great Groups. These are small groups of people who are usually in a similar stage of life, and they meet together and they get to know one another's stories and they talk about how to live out faith together. And we've got hundreds of people in our church who are a part of these great groups. It's people and families like mine who move to this area for work, and they don't have any extended family in the area. But great groups start to feel like family. Great groups are awesome because they make big church feel small enough that you don't get overlooked. And Sarah and I, we've been a part of a number of different groups in the past 11 years, with quite a few of you here in this room. And each of those groups and each of those relationships has helped us to build a network and a safety net so that if we get in a bind today, we know we could call on any of those people and they'd come running. But can I tell you about the toughest calls we get in the church office? We get calls from parents who have some, you know, their teenagers run off the rails somehow and things are really bad and they don't know what to do. Or we get a call from a spouse who's crying. It looks like their marriage may be over. We get benevolence calls from people who they've just been on a downward slope things have been tight and they're about to lose the house or they're going to lose the car. And they all want to know, can the church help? And we want to help, but the first thing I always ask myself is this person in a group? The answer is usually no, and you know why? It's because if they're in a group, we don't get the call. If they're in a group, their group is the first place they turn. And I've seen so many people get carried through some tough situations because their group members were like scuba buddies that were right there. They came alongside and they provided a breath of fresh air when they needed it most. Did you know that the Greek word pneuma, the Greek word we use to describe the Holy Spirit that lives inside of each one of us who's a follower of Jesus, that same word can be translated breath? Which means that when you've got a spiritual community, you're surrounded by friends who are carrying fresh air with them everywhere they go. But there are a lot of you who don't have that kind of community. You come to this service every Sunday and you love Jesus and you worship and you pray, but nobody in this church knows your story and they definitely don't know your struggle. And I want to tell you, I'm thrilled you're here on Sunday mornings, and I'm thrilled that you get something out of this, but you need to know this. If Sunday morning is the extent of your church experience, you're not having a church experience. Because church is about community. It's about a group of people who can accomplish more for Jesus together because two are better than one, the writer of Ecclesiastes would say. It's about a family who helps each other up when one falls down. It's about a gathering of people who can stand together against the world's insults and attacks and disappointments because a cord of three strands doesn't break easily. And if you consider yourself part of this church, then I don't want you to miss out on the spiritual connections, the deep relationships that can make all the difference when you need it most. But you've got to start before you need it. You got to start yesterday, earlier if possible. And so I want to invite you to a next step. If you haven't done it already, I want to invite you to be part of one of our great groups, which are officially relaunching for the spring semester over the course of the next 2 weeks. And I promise, I'm not inviting you to this because I just want to see Heritage Ministries grow. Truthfully, I don't care about the numbers. I'm inviting you because you need a spiritual buddy system. You need community. And you can get started, you can get signed up by visiting hccnext.com. We use HCC Next because we believe that everybody has a next step they can take in their journey with God. So you can go to hccnext.com and you can fill out the online form and we'll contact you this week and make sure that we connect you with a group that's a good fit for you. But I'm pleading with you. You've got to pick your dive buddy before you get in the water, before you get in trouble. And you've got to buy insurance before the storm comes. And you have to invest your life now in relationships that'll help you when you need it the most.